G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Looks like a nice morning, too. I'm not sure what the temperature's going to be. I missed Johnny Bowden's update before, but I know one man who'll know. Adam White is his name. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning, Half. 19 degrees today. Light winds. So, perfect for golf.
Are you playing golf today?
No.
Right.
Love to be, but I'm not. But a bit flat that I'm not. But that's okay. That's okay. Bit of news for you off the top.
Right.
Significant news, really. Elf on the Shelf arrived.
What do you mean he arrived?
Well, he arrived on the 1st of December, I told you.
Well, it was yesterday.
Yeah, but just confirmation that it did come to our house.
Well, did he just rock up on the day?
On the 1st.
Shouldn't it be the overnight of the 30th and then comes in and when you wake up on the 1st, he's there?
That's right. Well, I hadn't seen Elf on the Shelf before I left for work. And
so he wasn't there or you hadn't seen him?
I hadn't seen him. I didn't know where he'd just popped up.
Well, where was he?
He was on a shelf.
Which shelf?
The shelf. The bookshelf.
How many shelves have you got?
It caused consternation in our house yesterday because Jemima is scared of the elf, which is a bit of an issue.
Well, I did say to you, you sent a photo of the elf to me yesterday.
Yes, I did.
And it's a dead ringer for your son, so it's a doll version of your son.
It does a bit look like that.
And that freaked me out a bit, so I'm not surprised that Jemima's a little bit freaked out.
It started to freak me out a bit about that as well. But it's working early because we were having dinner last night and there was a little bit of misbehaviour and James was telling Campbell, Fisbee as we call it. I don't know why we call it Fisbee, but we call it Fisbee. Fisbee's watching, Campbell. You won't get anything for Christmas. And then it resulted in the first list, Christmas list, that was compiled by the kids as they ate dinner for what they wanted.
Right.
So it works, this thing. So for parents out there listening who don't know much about Elf on the Shelf, you got to get involved in this because it works. The kids just self-manage themselves in the behaviour department.
Right. What is a Fisbee, just by the way?
No, it's just the name that they've called the elf on the shelf.
Right. Okay.
I tell you what, the Santa Claus has got a lot of work to do based on the list of things that were being put on the list.
What's the most expensive item on the list? If Santa was to go to a shop and purchase a gift on the list, the most expensive gift on the list, what would that cost Santa? It doesn't bother with that because he's got elves that make.
Yeah, exactly right.
Sort of stuff.
It wasn't too bad actually. I mean, most of it you wouldn't be surprised by. This was cricket type things.
Is that the official term?
Yeah. Well, Campbell has requested a Missouri helmet, and James has requested a Shrey helmet.
Oh.
So
one's very big in the subcontinent.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other in the other parts of the world.
Yeah. So arm guards, thigh pads, roller cricket bags, cricket bats, Australian One Day shirts. This is the sort of stuff that's on the list. James has placed a request for a Ben McDermott doll. And
does Ben have a doll?
I don't believe that there is such a thing. But he's requested one. So that was what was going on last night.
Right, okay. All right, well, the elf is officially on the shelf.
That is
good news. That is very good news.
It is.
There's a distressing SMS has just come through. Oh, listen, this is at 6:04. I would listen to you guys a lot more if Half didn't do his absolutely annoying good morning everybody line. Change that and you'll have more listeners guaranteed. Now, I'd be surprised if...
Jeez, you opened a can of worms there.
1.7 seconds of 2.5 hours is going to drive you away. I am surprised by that. But it's feedback, and all feedback is assessed around here. So thank you for the SMS, 0416 90 50 52. It's not something I've heard too much of, but appreciative.
If you had to name the top 10 athletes in the world, I would put to you that nearly half of them have got COVID.
Okay. So LeBron James hasn't got COVID?
No. No. Well, basketball handled themselves quite well.
I know. Tom Brady? Has he got COVID?
No, not this stage.
Oh, no. So, but he's a chance, the way things are going. Yeah, we'll chat about that a little bit later on after 7 o'clock. No, about 6:30, about half an hour's time. Who else is the... Lewis Hamilton is what you're getting at.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton.
He's certainly saying he's in the top 10. Yep.
The number one golfer in the world, Dustin Johnson.
DJ got it too.
He had it, yep.
Has he got it or had it?
No, he had it. Oh, he doesn't have it at the moment.
Okay, well, that's good news.
The number one tennis player in the world, Novak Djokovic.
Novak, yeah. Yep.
So, it's getting out there.
Well, but those, I'm concerned about some of the way that these people are carrying on. Like Novak, there's no surprise Novak's got it. I'm not, or had it, no surprise there at all. So I'm not copping that one. DJ.
What do you mean not copping it?
Well, because he threw himself out there, he's throwing parties, Novak. He's had no concern for the virus at all. He had no respect for it. If you don't respect it, you're going to get it, my theory. And you might get it if you do respect it too, but if you don't respect it, you're absolutely going to get it, the way things are going.
Or Usain Bolt had it, or Usain, whatever you want to call him, the fastest man on earth.
Retired, though.
Outside that rugby player that was at O'Carr.
Josh at O'Carr.
Yeah. So the second fastest player on the planet. But it's interesting because the question I have for you is, I reckon that's some of the biggest names in world sport have had COVID. Geez, a lot of elves on the shelves and things coming through as we speak. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I don't think it's a good thing.
No, I know it's not a good thing. But what I mean by that is it normalising it just as because they get it and they get over it and they just move on and keep going? Or is it a good thing in the sense of that anyone can get it, and that even the best or the best athletes in the world can get it, so you've got to be careful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think what we've learned through this whole journey is that it affects people differently, so I don't think anyone really wants to get it, just in case. So I'm not sure that it's the normalising it of or seeing that the best of the best, so to speak, in the world of sport particularly, get it, that it's cool and it's okay and, you know, don't get too stressed about it. Because I think it's got the potential to cause much more damage. And we still don't know the long-term side effects either, just by the way, of what it can do to your system. So I don't think it's a good thing, but I think what you're saying is that it's getting to a point now where it's not as alarming. It's not as impactful through the community when you see that big names are getting it. Because chances are, numbers would say, of recent times, you're going to get it at some stage, the way things are rolling. Now, Australia, hopefully, and the way we've handled ourselves, hopefully it's not the case. But the rest of the world, if you look at the rest of the world, like the numbers across the globe, and you're more across this than I am, are unbelievable in terms of the number of people that have been affected by this thing and infected by this thing.
Mm.
It's remarkable. So I'm not sure it's a good thing, but it does say that, you know, You're a chance.
I'm trying to get my point across. I'm not really sure what the point is, but it's probably more the fact that you don't have to be unhealthy to get it. You don't have to be old to get it. That, you know, it doesn't discriminate against anybody. And even people that are showing relatively good precautions can get it. Now, I wouldn't suggest that Novak Djokovic showed the greatest of precautions.
No.
Usain Bolt, because they both caught it, I think, partying. But when it comes to Lewis Hamilton and to Dustin Johnson, they have, you know, they have sort of shown fairly good precautions to try and not get it, and they found themselves with it. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting. Lewis Hamilton, Dustin Johnson, Novak Djokovic, in three major sports, the best in the world have got it, and then the fastest man on earth has got it. That's a pretty good list that's being assembled of people that have got it.
Yep. I hadn't thought about it like that, I must admit.
What do you think of the Channel 7 cricket fracas that seems to have gone to another level today? Do you care?
Yeah, my word. I think it's fascinating. I think it's absolutely fascinating. And there was a really good piece on Crick Info by Dan Bredig about it too.
Yeah, it is a good piece, yeah.
That I read overnight, or late last night, about the whole thing. It seems... No, I don't have any side in this, but it seems that it's become quite petulant from the broadcaster's perspective. And that annoys me a bit, I mean, it's sort of schoolyard stuff, which annoys me a bit when you get to big business. But the way that Channel 7 seem to be carrying on and leaking, now they're leaking conversations, that makes me mad as a sports person, sports fan.
Mm.
But seemingly, they want their cake and eat it too. So they're happy to leak the stuff and then talk about privacy and we can't give you any details of the deal. So they're making a mockery of the whole deal. And if Cricket Australia came out really strongly yesterday in their press release. And I think hit the nail on the head with the way they carry themselves. I thought they were very, very good yesterday, Cricket Australia, and how they presented their case at the table. I'm going to read a bit of that for you too, because I think it's worth reading if I can find it. So I'll get to that shortly. Cricket Australia. Here it is. This is from Nick Hockley, Cricket Australia interim CEO. And he makes a couple of really good points at the start too. With so much positivity around Australian cricket, it is disappointing that Seven West Media has again chosen to use the media to talk our wonderful game down. CA has maintained all along our commitment to delivering a thrilling summer of cricket, and on behalf of all involved, be that governments, partners, players and staff, I'm proud to say we're doing just that. We remain confident in our contractual position. In the most challenging environment sport has faced, with the support of our friends at the BCCI, CA has ensured the much-anticipated series with India can go ahead safely. The first two men's dead eyes one day is in between Australia and India set viewership records and is a great indicator of the level of interest in the upcoming Vodafone Test Series for the Border Gavaskar Trophy, which includes the first ever day-night test against India. Goes on a bit, talking about the WBBL and the Women's Internationals against New Zealand and their numbers as well. I think they came out and just made some really strong points about the positives, and all we're hearing from Seven, who are clearly trying to leverage and bargain, are bringing up all the negatives. But it seems, I don't think Seven are winning any friends here in any respect from either the CA or even the fans. And in fact, I'm keen to hear from the fans on the SMS 0416905052, who is winning that that war between CA and Cricket and Channel 7 at the moment.
I think there was a pretty important point made by Steph Beltrami, who works at Cricket Australia. She's sort of head of broadcasting and other bits and pieces. Yep. Where she said at one point in a sort of a leaked text conversation or an email conversation or something, it was all part of the things that came out yesterday, where she said to Channel 7, "We're in a pandemic, for God's sake."
And that's exactly the
and
quote.
I kind of feel that's kind of been lost in all of this. And I feel, and I'm a bit like you, I don't have sides, I don't really care too much about this. But it is important in the sense that your free-to-air partner when it comes to cricket, which is the big national sport in this country in the summer, but probably the biggest national sport when you consider the fact that the AFL and NRL sort of split down the middle with the country. Does it actually want cricket? Does it actually love cricket? Or is it doing it because it didn't want Nine to have it? Like, it just feels that way a little bit. And it seems that ever since they got it, they regretted signing on the dotted line. And even to the point of, you look at what's happened with this schedule this year, with the one-day games being played before the test matches. Now, it seems now that Channel 7's annoyed about that. Now, they had the opportunity to bid for that. They had the opportunity to have those games. They didn't want them. So Fox have them exclusively, and because of the pandemic and because of quarantine rules, things were changed, and all the one days and all the T20s happened before the test matches and before the Big Bash.
Yeah.
It's like Channel 7 are trying to blame God for that almost, by saying that, oh, hang on a sec, we wanted to start with the Big Bash first, and we wanted the test matches first before the one days. Now Fox are getting a free hit, and then we feel that we've missed the big start to the summer and all these sorts of things. And kind of like, why don't you come out and admit the fact we made a mistake? We shouldn't have bid as much as we did for the cricket.
So $450 million is part of the $1.2 billion deal for the cricket rights, whenever that was, a couple of years ago. I seem to think, I must admit, I read all that stuff yesterday in the transcripts that have been released. They're in the papers and online if you want to have a look at them and go through them fully.
It's like the next episode of The Crown. Like, it's very dramatic. It's full on.
I haven't seen The Crown, but they tell me it's pretty good. I was reading, because talking about missing the boat and Foxtel getting free kick with the one day at the start of the summer, I was thinking to myself, surely that sort of rolls into the Big Bash. I imagine that once you get your appetite for cricket, you sort of stay with it through the summer. And I would see this being a real positive for Channel 7 and the coverage of the Big Bash, because the one days all the last couple of years, last few years, have been lost at the end of the test series. No one gives a rat's, and it's a bad scheduling system. It's just plugging holes for the calendar and the bipartisan deals they have to do for the different national bodies. This is going to give it real impetus, I reckon, for a great summer of cricket in terms of fan interest and engagement. I would think this is a boon for the Big Bash. People will go, right, this is good. Cricket's good. We're making lots of runs. Our best stars are doing great things. Now, the Big Bash doesn't always have the best stars, but if it's going to be on nightly as it always has been, I think they'll get a great response on free-to-air telly.
But importantly, you just made a very good point. The Big Bash has never had big stars. It never had. I mean, it has had a sprinkling, mainly of retired players, but it never has been what Seven thought it had, and that's confusing in itself. But I'm kind of agree with you, and I think they've, whether it's intentional or unintentional, and I think it's unintentional, they've kind of got the schedule right now. Start with the white ball stuff, international stuff. Start with it. Get us thinking about it. Get us going, because at the end of the day, and we've talked about this a lot on the show over the years, it doesn't really matter. I feel like when the test matches finish, that's almost the end of the interest in the international summer.
That's when cricket finishes.
The one-dayers are the sort of, it's the fill afterwards.
Yep.
You know, the test players are tired, some get rested, it doesn't really mean that much. So it's just almost like exhibition cricket. And the Big Bash kind of, it takes precedence over the one-day games because at least it means something in the sense that they've got a ladder, they're trying to play in the finals, all that sort of thing. And whether you like the Big Bash or not, whether you think it's important, at least it has some sort of meaning in the context of a season.
Yep.
Rather than playing five meaningless one-day games scattered across 2 weeks. So I kind of feel that they've got it right. So I'm in agreeance with you to a point. I think what the initial schedule was for the Big Bash and the Test Series to start on the same day. So it was going to be a Test match during the day, Big Bash starts at night, away we go, all on Seven, and that sort of signals the start of the international summer. It's obviously gone a different way, but there's reasons for it. It's called a world pandemic, I would have thought, anyway.
It's a good point from Steph, as you pick up. It is a worldwide pandemic, for God's sake, Lewis. Nobody knows that more than you, as part of that leaked conversation. Yeah, the SMS is cricket winning by far. Free-to-air TV barely has a pulse in this country because they can't read the room. Another case of that here. So a bit of feedback coming through for the favour of cricket. So Nick Hockley, he'll be very happy about that, loves the program. He'll be very happy about that feedback from the listeners this morning. Did you know, Adam White? I don't think you will, but I'm going to stun you this morning with a statistic. Did you know that according to research from McCrindle, I don't know much about McCrindle.
I know what you're going to say.
Have you read this?
Maybe.
You must have. New research shows that 31% of Australian women have tattoos.
Well, I didn't know you were going to say that, but you're going to say something else. 31%.
What do you think I was going
to
say?
No, I thought you were going to talk about the most popular team in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, well, Melbourne Storm.
Yeah.
I'll talk about that later. 31%.
31%.
Of Australian women have tattoos, according to new research.
I reckon that is absolute rubbish.
Compared to 19% of men.
I reckon that is absolute rubbish.
Why would you say that?
I just reckon that's my gut feel.
I want to...
a very, very small sample size.
I'm throwing this out there. 0416905052. Are you with it or against it, this statistic? The study shows there has never been more Australians with multiple tattoos as they become more widely accepted rather than a youthful rebellion or a one-off decision. One in four people now have body art, it tells
me. Take that for data.
Baby boomers aged 54 to 72 reported having the most tattoos after Gen Y's aged 25 to 39.
Well, there you go.
How do you like those apples? One in four. I was a bit taken aback by that early doors when I read that this morning. But upon reflection, I reckon it's about right.
Really?
I reckon it's about right.
31% of women in this country have a tattoo.
Well, one in four people, full stop.
I wouldn't believe that would be even close to being true.
I reckon it's too far off. Let us know what you think. 0416905052.
I told Emma if she got any sort of body art, as you call it, divorce.
Flat out divorce.
Absolutely, straight to it. Sign the papers.
Well, what's the grounds when you have to tick the box on the divorce paper? Now, I don't know if you read them or not, and I certainly haven't. I haven't got time for that. What's the box that you tick? Is there a she got a tattoo box?
Well, I told her, no, I won't go into too many more details, but just tattoos, no, thank you. Gone.
Here we go. Off the estimates, first two straight in. More women absolutely have tats than men, just often in places not on public display. And I think there's an element of truth to that, absolutely. And then the next one that's come in on the back of that, men have larger, more visible tats. Women have smaller ones in secret areas. Wife's got four tats, another one. Me, clean skin. They love it. Says feathers in sale. And then I'm with the stat, and girls with tats are super hot. Good morning, Mrs. Juppy, says Juppy in Bendigo. Mrs. Juppy's got tats. See, that's five from five that have come in and agree with the stats. That's a sample size now. We're getting five from five. That's officially a sample size. Jeez. So I think Emma's not far away, and you need to start preparing yourself to tick the box on the sheet. She got a tat. I'm not sure that's going to hold up. I reckon you're going to get fleeced if you go with that one. Just rethink that. Emma, if you are listening, I suggest you go out there and test it. You mentioned the Melbourne Storm. Now, they have been deemed the number one sporting team in the nation. In fact, in Australasia. Did you see that? It's not just Australia, it's Australasia. They've beaten the Crusaders in Super Rugby and Sydney FC in the A-League. They're 2-3. Richmond came in fifth, despite coming from seventh in 2019. Wallaby Ben Darwin. Remember Wallaby Ben Darwin?
Yep.
He's got this game line analytics. And I think Jimmy's done some work with Ben Darwin and this game line analytics stuff. He has, yes. I'm getting the nod there from Craig. Jimmy's done. He's in the data. He takes effort data sort of stuff. Does Ben, and finds a way to correlate chemistry and team and that sort of stuff. He's got this formula that he uses. Now I don't know what it has. It's sort of like the herbs and spices. Mm. I don't know what's in it, but he's got this formula. And I would think on the surface, if you go through performances, over 8,000 individual matches were included in the data analysed. That's a good sample size, as we say. If you go through the performances of the Melbourne Storm of recent years, I don't think you'd come up with a better team, would you?
No, I couldn't think of one. They haven't won as many premierships as you think.
No. Like,
they've been very consistent in wins and losses throughout the course of the year. But
Remember
just the night that they won the premiership, what was it, a month ago now? I remember checking back to see how many. I thought they won more than that. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it is around culture and around the way they prepare and the way that they can develop the next generation through. They're not bottoming out at any point. I spent a fair bit of time last night trying to work out how they put it all together, and I just gave up because it just seemed too confusing.
It's a rolling five-year outcome.
Yeah, but how they come up with it. Yeah.
No, you'll never know that.
No, but it seemed to make a little bit of sense, and they've put women's sport in there as well now. So the New South Wales Breakers have got
the
quite high on the list.
Team.
Yeah, yep. And yeah, they've won a hell of a lot in New South Wales cricket, and even to the point of winning the Big Bash this year with one of two teams in there. The Thunder won it this year, even though the Stars were meant to be the Sixers. They didn't even get through to the final series. But yeah, no, it's interesting. It's this time of year, isn't it? There's not much going on. So
yeah, it's a little bit subjective, but at least there's a formula to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not totally subjective because there is a formula to it. There's a system to it. So rolling five-year outcome, the Melbourne Storm, according to the data, Gain Line Analytics, is the number one team in the country. And I must admit, superficially, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, I can't pick holes in that one.
Kirk Morrison is his name, former NFL linebacker and host of Total Coverage podcast. He might even be in the middle of the recording the podcast at the moment, so we've been able to track him down, which is excellent news for us. Kirk, good morning.
Morning, how we doing, everybody?
Yeah, we're doing well, buddy. We are doing very well, thank you very much. It's nice to have you a part of our program. We're doing a bit better than the poor old NFL at the moment, and the poor old Baltimore Ravens, who have got up to 12 players currently infected with the coronavirus, and therefore this game against Pittsburgh gets pushed back day by day by day. How big a problem is the COVID situation with the NFL full stop at the moment?
You know, honestly, I'm going to be real and say that I don't think it's much of a problem. I think that you have isolated cases, okay? The isolated cases with the Baltimore Ravens and, you know, the contact tracing within that team. It was a coach who actually tested positive, and he is around many of the players. He has since been fined, I believe, within the team, or it's been handled within the team. But, yeah, the outbreak was something that obviously every NFL team can handle if they do the proper protocols, the extensive protocols that the NFL has put in place. It just so happened that the Baltimore Ravens, they didn't follow those protocols. And that's the reason why they're in the situation that they are in. But literally outside of that, I mean, it's 32 teams in the NFL. We're talking about one team that really has gotten this far. We've gotten this far with one team really having such an outbreak. But I give kudos to the other 31 teams, right, who have went through the entire season, have done everything correctly, have done everything in terms of protocols, and have not had they put guys on the COVID-19 list, but they have not had an interruption with their games, similar to what we've seen with Baltimore. So I would say I'm not in such a panic. I don't think the NFL is are they upset they have to move games? Yes. They don't want to do that. But I think that do they have it under control? I think right now, currently, the NFL has it under control. It's just one isolated incident and involves one team of 32.
Well, we did have the Denver Broncos situation the other day with the four quarterbacks out of the game. They wanted the coach to come in and take the spot. Ended up with a wide receiver who threw more interceptions than he did receptions. I think it might have been through the afternoon. They ran the ball a bit. So, I mean, there's been a couple of cases. Have the bubble, the protocols been strong enough? I mean, you're talking about maybe that's 2 out of 32, so the ratio is still pretty good. Has the protocols been strong enough?
Yeah, the protocols are strong enough. It's just the Denver Broncos team and their head coach, Vic Fangio, said it. Hey, our quarterback let us down. Our quarterback room put us in this situation. Like, if the guys were doing all of the protocols and wearing their mask and keeping their distance and doing what was asked of them, right? These are the leaders of your team, the
yep.
quarterbacks. They are the most important position. They should be the ones who are doing the correct thing each and every day so it doesn't impact the football team. But by them not following the protocols, those four, yes, it hurt the football team. And they had to get, you mentioned Kendall Hinton, who was a practice squad wide receiver, had to go in there and play quarterback. That's why the NFL didn't postpone the game, because it wasn't a situation in which, it was circumstances that were not – above the control of those guys on the Broncos. It was fully in their control. And if they went through the right protocols that they were supposed to, they wouldn't have been in that situation. So I think their head coach, even, pretty much I said it before, he said it, that they messed up. Not us, those quarterbacks messed up. And they basically lost the football game because those guys didn't follow the guidelines and protocols. So that's what I think. That was a big scare for a lot of teams as well in the NFL, that we got to make sure that we don't put ourselves in that situation. So for one team, it's a negative, but I think for the other teams around the NFL, it's like, okay, it's a positive, because we're going to make sure that we never let that happen to us.
So, Kirk, I've been listening to a lot of the commentary around this, particularly on ESPN, which we get over here, and Fox as well, and there's sort of some speculation where maybe the final series goes into a bubble format similar to what happened in the NBA. Do you think that that's a possibility, or you think this is the warning shot, maybe, as you said, that the sport needed to get people back on track and looking after themselves a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, like, right now, we're in the final month of the season. We've been through the first three. We went through September. We've been through October. We've now been through November. And now it's a little bit more critical, because it's more about the rise around in America, in the United States. Obviously, the cases have risen. And so I think the NFL may go to more of a bubble-type situation, so we don't have to worry about losing playoff games. I can see that, because now we're talking about less teams. But I don't know, because now you're talking about moving entire franchises for a week, 2 weeks, whatever it may be. Is it possible? Yes. Can they do it? Yes, I believe so. But I believe if they get through this final month of the season unscathed with no hiccups at all, I think you have to say keep it the same way that you've been doing it. I mean, the testing is every single day. They have not allowed media, anybody outside of the organization, inside the building. I know I've been in contact and in conversations about how will the playoffs and Super Bowls work, because those are the highly sought after events that people, media, want to be at. I think the NFL is like, no, it will be sort of a bubble in which just players, personnel, and that's it. So we may see more isolation from players who may go to these playoff games earlier than normal, but I don't see it being a bubble-type format. I think that's a little bit too much, and now you're talking about playing in neutral sites rather than the home venues that some of these teams have earned all season to be able to play at.
Let's talk a little bit of F1 action, because it's not so much what's happening on the track, but in the paddock and in the hotel, I suppose. Well, Lewis Hamilton, the world champ, the seventh-time world champ, has tested positive to the virus. He'll miss this week's Sakhir Grand Prix. And to talk us through that, to find out a little bit more about the situation, Jenny Gow, Formula One reporter with the BBC, has been good enough to join us. Great to have you, Jenny. Thank you.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
It is lovely to have you on the program. Now, firstly, because this is one of the biggest stories in sport across the globe at the moment, that Lewis has contracted the virus. How is he? Is he okay?
Yes, I think he's fine. He said that he has mild symptoms. He basically woke up on Monday morning, informed at the same time that a contact before his arrival in Bahrain had tested positive. So he took a further test, which was returned positive. He took another test as well, just to make sure that that was the correct treatment. It's late here.
Results.
Diagnosis, yeah, we'll take that.
Result, there we go. That was the word that I couldn't find in my small brain at that moment in time. That's what happened. And now he's got to self-isolate for 10 days before he can do anything else.
Yeah, and how does this actually happen? Obviously, there was that close contact. Are they not in a bubble of sorts to protect them from this sort of thing?
Yeah, so they are in bubbles, and this obviously happened in the time between Turkey and Bahrain, when there was this clear weekend when everybody returned to whatever sort of life they wanted to do. I believe Lewis may well have met up with family in that time, but he has been very, I suppose, prominent in saying that he would keep his bubble as small as possible. So it looks like at some point during the time between Turkey and Bahrain, he was exposed to somebody who had COVID. We don't know who that was. And that's what's led to his positive test.
And so, Jenny, is there a concern as a result of that he may have spread it to other drivers or other members of his team that might have a sort of a bit of a chain reaction through pit lane?
I think they've been very careful within Formula One, as you say, to create these bubbles to try and ensure that as fewer people come into contact with each other as possible. Now, the team haven't suggested that anyone else has needed to be tested, and they certainly haven't said that anybody else has had a positive test back. But routinely, everybody in the paddock has to have a test before they go into the paddock and then on the Sunday afterwards. So I suppose you have to wait and watch and see what happens, but there will be a few people that Lewis has certainly been in close contact with. It's just who they are and how close that contact actually was.
So will somebody fill his seat, or will they just run one car this weekend?
Nah, Mercedes will never run one car if they don't have to. And this is like the biggest question now, dominating everyone's minds: who will get that seat? This is the golden dream ticket in Formula One. It's the car that's almost unbeatable, and all of a sudden everybody is racing to get that seat. So it looks like it's going to come down to two people. It's either going to be the reserve driver for Mercedes, a guy called Stoffel Vandoorne, who has previously raced for McLaren, or it's going to be the Williams driver, George Russell, who is part of the Young Driver Academy for Mercedes. I have a feeling that's the way the team would like to go, but they're going to have to do a deal with Williams to make that happen. And then maybe Stoffel Vandoorne would slot into the seat that would be vacant at Williams, but it's just whether they can make that happen or whether Stoffel gets the seat instead.
So is there a danger? This is interesting, Jenny. Is there a danger that Stoffel, if Stoffel gets the drive, let's just put him in the seat for a moment, that he goes really well, finishes in, you know, top three, top five, that people start to think, well, hang on a second, how good is Lewis? That maybe it's just the car that's magnificent.
Do you know, I think the bigger worry will be for Valtteri Bottas, in all honesty. And yeah. Lewis Hamilton is proven to be one of the best drivers in the world. Valtteri Bottas has done a great job this year in just trying to keep up with Lewis. But if someone comes into that seat, and let's just say they somehow manage to beat Bottas in qualifying or the race, that's not going to be a good look. So I think there's a lot of pressure on whoever gets that seat to be able to perform, but there's more pressure on Bottas to be able to beat them.
That is interesting. Mm. That's an interesting byplay, I think, as part of all this. Have you had many cases in F1 this year in terms of even team members or pit crew or the like? We haven't seen or heard too much from our end.
I think we're up to about 60 in total positive tests, and that's from, I can't remember, it was like 1%, I think it was, of people had turned back a positive test. Now, obviously, Lewis is the most high-profile F1 person that there is in the paddock. A couple of the other drivers have had positive tests this season, both of them at Racing Point, so Lance Stroll and Sergio Perez. There have been a few of the other people in the paddock who have tested positive as well. Most recently, I suppose, Simon Roberts, the Williams deputy team principal, tested positive, and Jonathan Wheatley, who's at Red Bull, and he's the sporting director there. But the cases have been pretty well, kind of, I suppose, nipped in the bud, and it's not spread, it's not been rife. So I think F1 have to be commended for all of the things they've put in place to try and protect everybody.
At Melbourne United. With the NBL, because Dean Vickerman's got some work to do, getting them ready for another big season. Your coach is back with us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
And you've had your own concerns with the whole COVID experience. How's everyone come through? What have you learned through all that?
Well, we learned a lot. Obviously, the team most affected in the league, having, you know, 12 of our players and then some family, you know, beyond that, actually contract the virus, and it put a different sense of care into the word coach and the organisation, what we needed to do to support these players, what we need to do better to ensure it never gets into our environment again.
Yeah, and how far off were you in that happening in the first place? Obviously got through, but when you worked out how it all happened, were you just a bit stiff, or was it something that you hadn't done as an organisation properly or effectively?
Yeah, we set our guidelines about, you know, who we were going to allow into the gym, and we stuck by that. Did we do enough checks, you know, of people coming in? We just weren't at that point where, you know, temperature checking and all those kind of things just kind of hadn't happened. So, obviously, we learnt, and, we're better for it.
Well, you're going to be better for it with a couple of signings. Well, one signing and one potential signing, according to the news cycle in the last little while. Coach, Scotty Hobson from the New Zealand Breakers is a balling machine, he is. In the highlights video that you pumped out, the social media team pumped out the other day, if it can't get you salivating at the prospect of seeing him in Melbourne United colours, I don't know what will. He looks outstanding.
Yeah, he's got length. He's 6'7". He's athletic. He shoots a ball at a high level. You know, he's one of the best isolation players in the league. And then he makes others better. You know, he's a 4.5 to 5 assist kind of guy a night as well. So. And then all reports say he's just a great person. Obviously, you know, our communications with him have been outstanding. But, you know, when you do have people call you that have worked with him and say, wow, you've got a great person there, it's always encouraging. So, yeah, great signing for us. Perfect, you know, positionally with the group that we have this year. And, you know, he had a couple of injury concerns. So we just last year. So we hope that we can get the, you know, the full 28 games or whatever we're going to play this year out of him as well.
Well, the other one we're keeping a close eye on is Jock Landale. We're making a play for him. How's that looking?
Promising. You know, it's obviously really for him, it was a big chance to try and make the NBA this year, and a year that, you know, it was COVID affected for him as well. It was challenging for NBA teams to work players out and do the things that they needed to do. And so we may be the beneficiary of that in some way if he doesn't make the NBA, and they've started their training camps right now. So, you know, we hope that he can stay with us for a year. We hope that would be longer, but, you know, we think the talent level that he is, and I think he'll go and have a great impact on the Olympics. And, you know, there may be a bigger job for him after the Olympics. But, yeah, if we can have him for 1 year, a Melbourne guy, you know, elite, a boomer, if we can put him in a Melbourne United singlet for a season, it'd be outstanding.
Talking about the players looking to get over into the NBA, how much more difficult has it been for them with the COVID situation? Has that made it difficult for them as individuals or for the teams over there? What's the situation from your point of view?
Yeah, I think even the draft process was totally different this year. One of my assistant, Ross McMains, consistently works our draft prospects each year, and you know, teams visit the workouts, and there's just those things just didn't kind of happen this year. And you know, it was so much remote filming that they had to do to send to NBA executives to see what people had done. And you know, we were just recruiting a guy recently that had a great college career and has dropped kind of, you know, 30 pounds, but teams didn't get to see that, you know, during the off season as well. So that part was different. I think traveling internationally, which in some ways in different years has been, you know, much easier than this year, to get a player over there to camp and to, you know, to test them out. And I think an American executive had a choice of grabbing an American player to, you know, put into their camp, or an international. It was going to be an easy decision to pick a local player.
Now, it's a few more days away to the start of the AFLW season. First week in February, I think, is when we'll get our teeth into that. All being equal, I think. Emma Carney, I'm sure, is looking forward to that, the North Melbourne captain. She joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Em.
Morning, everyone. How are we?
We're going very well, thank you. Are you hearing anything different about that schedule? Do I just maybe read out about the first week in February? Are we going to plan, Emma?
Come on, half, you're a coach, so you should know more than me. But
they don't tell the coaches anything. They tell the stars everything, Em.
Oh, they definitely don't tell me anything. So, look, I don't know. All I'm hearing is first week of Feb. So, fingers crossed everything goes well with COVID and we can get our season underway.
That would be nice. Hey, how's your world different this time around? New coach, of course, Darren Croc has taken the reins there at the Kangaroos. How's he going, the big Croc?
Yeah, Croc's going really well. The girls are absolutely loving him. He's just had so much experience in coaching and... yeah, he's always like a father figure to us. He's a bit of a dag at times and, you know, he's just creating a really fun environment for us to be there, which is great.
What's changed, Em, with him coming in and taking the reins? You say it's creating a fun environment. Is it a significant shift from what you've had previously?
Yeah, it probably is a little bit. I mean, he's just had so much footy experience, so he knows the sort of environment that you need to have at that elite level. He's just got a wealth of experience, so he creates really good relationships with all the players, which I think when you're coaching women's sport, you've got to make the girls feel really valued, and that's what he does really well. So that's probably a major shift. But you know, he makes it really competitive training. So we all love a bit of competition. Me in particular, I love it. So. He does that to sort of challenge us as well, which is really good.
We spoke, Emma, to Karen Harrington last week and spoke about the premature end to last year. And, you know, like Carlton, you guys were obviously a big chance to win the whole thing and you didn't have the chance to win the whole thing. How does that sit with you now looking back sort of 7 or 8 months later?
Oh, yeah, like it was disappointing end to the season, but, I mean, everyone has to move on from that because it's a total new ball game. Every other team's going to be improving from what they did last year. And, you know, the likes of a Carlton us, even Freo, Melbourne, who are still in it, you know, they're looking to win a premiership as well. So I guess for us, it's just about resetting and improving on what we were able to do last season.
So you don't use it as a sort of a bit of a driver. There's no sort of the chip on the shoulder sort of going in to this year to help sort of use extra motivation?
Oh, not really. I mean, we're all playing the game to win a premiership. That's why we play it. Play sport, isn't it? Like, so I think for us, it's just putting it to the back of our minds and focusing on what we can control. And that's just further development of our squad and further connection so we can go to another level.
Yeah. Do you think you'll be better this year, looking at the list and I guess just the natural development of all the girls? I mean, Half talks about it all the time, that how much better they keep coming back every year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with Croc's experience, you know, just making subtle changes to our game plan, but also the fact that back-to-back pre-seasons, I mean, you know, our fitness goes to another level, but just also the knowledge of the players has also improved. And, you know, we've drafted a couple of young girls, and the young girls coming through the system now, as Half would probably attest to as well, they've just got that natural ability. They can just pick up the game and slot in straight away. So having a few of those come into our squad as well just brings a bit of enthusiasm and energy as well, which is what we're probably after.
Now, boys, Emma and I had crossed paths in both of our previous roles at the Melbourne Stars.
Of course.
In the WBBL. So I was just wondering, Em, what did you think about the final? Were you watching? Are you still really invested in the Stars?
Yeah, I am really invested. I've watched most of their games throughout the season. Yeah, pretty disappointing the way it turned out in the end. But, you know, they had a great season. This year, it was nice to see the likes of someone like Alana King stepping up with her leg spin bowling. She's probably been quiet the last season or so. So, yeah, and obviously nice to see Meg back in the green colours as opposed to the orange. But, yeah, hopefully they can go one step better next year.
And, Em, it's been a conversation we've had a little bit in here at RSN, and I'm sure in many different areas have, the question of whether female athletes can play both sports. Obviously, you've made the decision to just focus on the AFLW. Was that a tough decision? Could you still do both if you wanted to?
Oh, I probably could still do both. We've got Jess Duffin, who plays at Kangaroos with us. She still does both. Mind you, she's just had a baby, so she had to put her WBBL career on hold. But look, yeah, you can, but there are mounting pressures to be able to sustain both. I mean, for me, I wanted to focus on my career outside of sport. So I'm in education, so I sort of made the decision to, instead of trying to juggle all three commitments, I decided to give cricket the flick. I mean, for me, football came more naturally. It was probably less stressful for me, so that's probably the decision that I made to give away cricket. But still, it's not an easy decision. Like, you know, so many of your friends play those sports. And, you know, for me, growing up, that's all I knew was playing a lot of cricket. So, but I think at this stage, players can still juggle both. We've still got, you know, someone like Mon Conti, Kessa Levy, who's just been drafted to Richmond as well. They're doing their basketball commitments at the moment, and then they'll move into AFLW. But I think as all sports sort of progress and the elite environments develop as well, it'll definitely become more difficult to do both.
Speaking of players coming and going, the NBA and US sports, they come and go willy-nilly. They're one team one day, the next team the next day, and next week they're having another crack at it. And Ryan Brokhoff is an Aussie basketball gun, applying his trade, living the dream over there in the NBA. Spent a couple of years at the Dallas Mavericks, and of course this season being quite a tumultuous one, has now found his way to the Philadelphia 76ers, which is an excellent result because we love when the Aussies hang out together, gets to hang out with Ben Simmons and co there at the Sixers. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Ryan, g'day.
G'day. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you on the program. Now, we're always interested in this sort of stuff, the way the machinations of all this happening, the player movement, particularly in US sport, where it seems to be quite frenetic at times, certainly through a free agency period like the NBA have. How much say have you had in where you have landed now at Philadelphia?
I mean, I make the final decision. But yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces that kind of have to come together at the right time. Obviously the bigger name stars very much can sort of dictate where they want to go and things like that. But for myself personally, it's finding teams that have interest and want to bring me in. And, I joined Philadelphia before the sort of the bubble in July. So it's good to be back. And this time, hopefully get a stay here a little bit longer and get a chance to get on the court.
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to bring up. The fact that you've been there for a little while now without actually really being involved and how that feels to finally walk in.
Look, it feels good. Today was sort of my first session on the court. It was still an individual session or a small group just with the new COVID rules, but it's just good to get back on the court and get back to work. And it's been months since that's happened, so it's definitely a good feeling.
What's it going to look like this year, Ryan, or do you still not know? Because obviously the NBA was played in that bubble format down in Florida. Might it be the same again this time around, or might it go back to a more traditional way?
Right now it's going back to more of a traditional season. So they've shortened the season down to 72 games from 82. And I think they're going to try and play it more like a baseball schedule over here, where you go to a city and you play multiple games before flying out. So it sort of limits how much travel we do have to do. They can kind of control it a little bit more if we're in one city for more than a night. So, look, I'm sure they're still working out a lot of details and how it's all going to work. But, I mean, the season starts in a few weeks, so everything's being done pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's going to come back pretty quickly. Yeah, the Philadelphia 76ers, Australians have got a really big connection with the team for obvious reasons. It must be exciting to go to a team that does have that connection with so many Australian fans.
Yeah, it really does. I saw Ben, had a chat to Ben at the facility today. The first time sort of we've been able to cross paths. Only got sort of back into the town Friday, I think it was. And, I had to pass 3 COVID tests before I was laid in the facility. And there's just, a lot more regulations I had to pass. But, walking in and seeing the familiar faces, it makes things a lot easier and the transition a lot easier.
And you've proven yourself to be a bit of a swingman on the court. You can play multiple positions on the floor. What do they want from you in Philadelphia? What's going to be your role?
I think it would be, sort of what it was in Dallas, someone to spread the floor out for guys like Van and Joel Embiid that take a lot of attention and draw a lot of attention, and just being sort of an outlet for them to be able to spread the floor and shoot threes and run back and play some defense. And, just whatever it is that the coach needs me to do to help the team be successful is sort of what I'm trying to accomplish.
And are you still improving? You're coming up, I think you just might have gone 30 about a month ago or 2 months ago. Are you still improving? 30's good, mate. 30's the new 20.
There's always things you can improve and always areas of your body and your game that you can improve. So, having such a long period off, I've been able to make sure to get my body, in the best shape it can be and work on some certain things. On the court, it's been a little bit challenging because I just haven't had the access to facilities like you would in the past, just with a lot of shutdowns and closures. But, when I did find time and find facilities, being able to work on certain things and sort of round out my game continually and also keeping, my greatest asset sharp.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough too. And from a selfish perspective back here in Australia, we're sort of looking at what the Olympics might look like too for a basketball team. There's been a lot of hype about the possibilities and the prospect of achieving a really, really outstanding result, getting a medal in Japan next year, in Tokyo next year. Do you have an eye on that? Of course, new coach Brian Gorgian's come in. Do you have an eye on that whilst you're trying to get ready for the NBA season?
Yeah, that's always something that's in my mind. Obviously, disappointed it didn't happen, this past year, because, I thought we were building up to it pretty well, but, there was just some things that are completely out of control. But definitely something I'm looking forward to and something I'm planning towards for, the June, July, August sort of period, once the NBA finishes and things like that. But it's definitely something that's on the radar, and I spoke to Coach Gordon the other day, so just sort of touching base, and I haven't had really any contact with him in the past. So, just to open the communication lines and make sure everybody's on the same page.
We are T-minus 25 days away from the start of the A-League season. That's what we are. And Scotty Jamieson, I'm sure, is looking forward to that. By goodness, he looks fit on the photos he's posting on the gram, the Melbourne City captain. He joins us again. Scotty, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mate, you are looking ripped to bits, like a piece of granite, just chiselled at the moment.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that description. It's been a tough pre-season, but I don't think I've changed too much in regard to anything I've done prior, so maybe it's just the dad bod now. Usually the dad bod goes the other way, the muscly way.
We did speak to you earlier, about a month ago maybe it might have been, and you're in Fat Club, which is extraordinary when you see the size of you. It must have been Fat Club, the success of Fat Club.
Yeah, all those extra sessions, it's paid off, obviously. But, yeah, I'm getting a bit of jealousy from the dads in my neighbourhood, because, as I said, I've gone the other way. Instead of blowing out, I've blown in.
Man, I'm very, very jealous. Don't worry about that at the moment. You are looking an absolute treat.
It's like another universe to me.
Hey, we're 25 days away, as I said, from the season opener. December 30 for you is when your first game is, and you take on Sydney FC in the grand final rematch. Is that the perfect way for City to start?
Yeah, why not? I think, essentially, you want to come up against the best, and the best of Sydney FC to beat us in the final. So, great start for us. I think we're in a very good place at the moment with our pre-season, having played Melbourne Victory and both Western United already. So we've got one or two more games, and then it's Sydney FC, who are currently in Qatar with the ACL. So we're very excited with the fixtures and looking forward to the first one on the 30th.
And I guess, Scotty, there's got to be a fair bit of confidence after what you achieved last season, albeit not getting the final result, getting so close, that you would have some momentum coming into this year.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think essentially, what we've done in pre-season so far has gave me more confidence. Just based on the fact that, we haven't shied away from what we did last year. We've actually improved and built on that. And that's the key. It was important that we continued on that trajectory of where we wanted to go as a club and as a team. And essentially, we've done that so far. And so that's been the pleasing thing. It's just about continuing it when it really matters, come December 30th and onwards.
Because that was going to be my next question, because history says across all sports, you'll get the teams that get close and not quite get there, but then they get comfortable and then they drop away straight away. Then you get the other teams that get close, and they use that as a sort of almost fuel to the fire to get themselves to the next level. And it can be sort of sensed through that next pre-season. That's kind of what you're saying is the case with Melbourne City.
Definitely. I mean, like, going off an example closer to your listeners, it would obviously be GWS, who made the grand final and then, fell away hopelessly last year. So it's something that when you get close, I guess there's only two ways you can go, and it's either down or up. And essentially, what we're doing now and what we've done over the past 2 months in pre-season gives me hope that we're going to go upwards. But like anything, talk is cheap, and the actions are the one that are proof. And it's essentially working hard day in, day out, which we've done, but continuing that right up until the final day of the season next year.
Now, you got a new coach, but the sort of the feeling is that you're going to play a fairly similar way with a fairly similar squad. Is that a fair assessment, or would it be a bit different?
Yeah. No, it is. It's going to have the DNA of what we started last year, albeit you throw in characteristics that Patrick possesses, intensity, passion, some real DNA of him as a coach and as a player. But, yeah, I think, you'll find when you watch us, it'll be very similar to last year, but in saying that, it'll have to be improved, because if we stand still, we're not going to win anything. We have to improve, and that's been the mantra this year, is really improving on what we did last year and building on that.
Speaking of building, there's been a lot of development out there at La Trobe Uni where Melbourne City are based. I remember the first season they moved out there, Scotty, where it was wheelie bins for ice baths and that sort of thing, and a pretty primitive surrounds out there at La Trobe. Just paint a picture of what the facility is like now for Melbourne City out there.
Yeah, look, I remember seeing pictures of the facilities under the name of Melbourne Heart, and it was pretty bare, with those, like you touched on, the wheelie bins and everything like that. But yeah, our facilities are second to none these days. Anyone who has seen it will attest to that. Obviously we've got the main pitches. We've got a facility that cater for the men, the women's, the academy. We've got, I've only seen one or two AFL facilities, and this one, the City Football Academy, definitely rivals it. Thanks to La Trobe, but also the owners, we've created probably one of the best facilities in Australia. So we're very fortunate as players, but it's something that you come to work every day and definitely thankful for, but also encouraging to work harder.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.